Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Another edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your co-host Jordan Reed, alongside my other co-host Miles Gorham, Jason Brown, and Yinka Allende. How's it going, guys?
It's going all right.
Pretty good.
Got to work on Yinka's time management skills, though.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'll tell you a little story, y'all. So I was at work
5 minutes late.
I get to work and all that stuff, and I get off at 6.
Were you on time to work?
Okay, I'm telling another story. We can get that later.
Fired on your day. So
work, 6 o'clock, and then I get a text that says, hey, we're taking pictures at 6. I'm like, oh, word, I'm not going to be there. So it's like, okay, we'll start at 6:30. 6:45 to the graduation. It was already like 3/4 of the way over. And it was cool or everything because I had like, you know, African drums and stuff and the processional. And then at one point, the speaker, or whatever, she's just like, there's not enough energy. Because usually in the past, they're just like, everybody shut up when your people's getting called, all that stuff. But she's like, there's not enough energy here. So they had us doing the wave. The wave, y'all. The wave. I probably haven't done the wave in probably about 14 years, like willingly. So after that, we took pictures. And then I had to like hightail it out because I was already late for this podcast. So moral of the story is I'm usually on time.
Usually.
You got out here keeping stereotypes alive.
Usually.
I got to, right? I got to keep the good ones alive. You know, I love chicken, being late, and that's about it.
So fixing your to-go plate or your real plate.
Popeyes hit you back, man?
Yeah, that's, they did. They hit him back.
Popeyes did me so dirty because, like, she called the number out, and I'm all excited because, like, you know, I got the two-piece, thinking I'm going to get a thigh and, you know, maybe a leg or something. And I come back, and they're chicken tenders. Chicken tenders, y'all.
or as Hoodie would call them, wings.
Yes.
That's different, though.
Wings. Boneless wings.
Boneless wings.
Oh, but, man. So what are we talking about today, y'all?
Got a lot of stuff on tap today. You know?
Yeah, we got a lot to get through.
You know, the Vikings wrapped up rookie minicamp last week, and, you know, there were some reports coming out. You know, Rodney Adams supposedly had a really good camp. Truesdale was a surprise name that had a really good camp, and Caleb Jones was another guy that was reportedly had a really good camp. But, you know, the biggest news of the week so far has been the Vikings signing former Cardinal and former Patriot wide receiver Michael Floyd.
You
know, hometown guy, former Notre Dame guy, teamed back up with Harrison Smith and Kyle Rudolph. But it's kind of mixed opinions as far as what he's going to bring to the team. So what's you guys' thoughts on the Michael Floyd signing, starting with you, Yinka?
I'll be honest, I do actually like the pickup. I think what Michael Floyd brings to the table is that, you know, downhill threat as well as, you know, a physical wide receiver. I think that's something the Vikings have missed for a while. I think that was their mentality for someone like Laquon Treadwell, not necessarily downfield, but just a kind of a bigger, more physical wide receiver rather than just a burner. So, I mean, I like the signing. I know a lot of people have said, Treadwell should be on notice, all that other stuff, but I don't kind of aspire to that school of thinking, just because, you know, Treadwell's Treadwell, Floyd is Floyd. I think every single season, all you want to do is bring in more talent. And yeah, if you can bring in a guy who has a similar skill set as another guy, in my opinion, that's great, just because you never know what's going to happen during that season. And if you have an offense that, you know, is very role heavy, like guys have to fit in a very specific role rather than guys having flexibility, If that guy goes down, it's good to have another guy that maybe has somewhat of similar skill sets. Not that Floyd and Laquon Treadwell will do, but just as far as body type, I think they're a lot more similar than any other wide receivers. So,
you know, we're going to get to that Laquon Treadwell. We're going to get to the Treadwell Floyd debate here in a second. But I just want to get you guys' overall thoughts. So let's just keep going around the table with it. Jason, what's your thoughts on the Michael Floyd signing?
I mean, I like it. It's low risk, low cost. And even though he was bad in 2016, I mean, he had some pretty good years before that. His kind of average depth of target just that he's had for his career would make him kind of that deep threat that a lot of us have talked about wanting on the team. Like, he's usually been targeted further down the field than really any of our guys. Of course, that's going to be the case playing for Bruce Arians, but he does have that experience kind of going downfield. He's athletic, he's big, he's strong, like Inka said. So if he can get, you know, his stuff together, you know, not get in any trouble off the field, clean up those drops that he was dealing with on the field last year, I mean, he could be a great value signing for the team.
I completely agree as far as, you know, him being the downfield threat and, you know, having that experience in Bruce Arians' offense. And, you know, he can be added to dimension to the Vikings wide receiver corps, something they haven't really had or something that they've been searching for, you know, in that big downfield threat wide receiver. But Floyd has a lot of stuff that he can bring to the table as far as the wide receiver room. Miles, what's your thoughts on the Floyd signing?
I think I'd mentioned a few times it's a nice signing just because there's a lot of upside. You know, he's played well over throughout his career so far besides this past season. I think it was his worst season as a pro. It's kind of unfortunate him having his worst season as a pro, you know, in his contract year. In his his fifth year, you know, at the age of like 26, you know, already being in the league for a while. But I mean, like I said before, you got a lot of upside. I think one thing to take note is, I know JR, we've mentioned this before, is you expect a guy like a Stephon Diggs to miss a game or two, and you know, whatever the suspension happens for Floyd, you know, two or four games, or you know, anywhere in between that, you know, if Diggs gets hurt in the middle of the season for a game or two. What you could always do is, you know, if Treadwell's playing well too at this point, you know, you could have Floyd and Treadwell on the outside and throw Thielen in the slot. You know, there's multiple, you know, combinations you can do with a guy like Floyd because he can play all over. And I think, you know, we might see Treadwell play in the slot a little more often this season too if he can get himself acclimated back into the offense in his second season. I think you might see quite a bit more combinations of guys lining up all over the field, because this isn't like a North Turner offense where, you know, most guys are playing one position and they're not really moving around too often. You're going to see a lot more guys in different spots, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting you said that, you know, just he brings a lot of flexibility to the table. He's a guy that can play the slot or he can play outside. And, you know, we all know Diggs is going to miss a couple games just because, you know, he's injury prone pre-draft, and that's been like his reputation. As far as, you know, being a guy that's often injured, and he missed a couple games last year as well. So just having that security blanket and that insurance added to the room could be an added plus. Now, I want to get you guys' thoughts on Laquon Treadwell and how this affects him. Does it kind of put him on notice, or does it just add competition to the room, starting with you, Yinka?
Sorry, I'm getting my podcast popsicle in. It was kind of like what I was saying before. I don't think that this necessarily puts Laquon Treadwell on notice. I mean, he's a first-year player. Or not first-year player, but he's only been in the league for really 1 year. There's still a lot more he can add to the table. As far as, you know, bringing Floyd in again, if what we find for Floyd is he is a downfield threat or he is just a bigger physical wide receiver, he can win in the middle. Again, that's just an added skill set that we bring to the table, more things that we can do. I don't necessarily always like looking at bringing in more players or bringing in players as, oh, well, this is competition for this player. It's competition for all the players. Competition for Diggs, Thielen, you know, Treadwell, anybody else who's on the roster, to be perfectly honest. Not Jerry's right, because we know that Jerry's right at the top of the depth chart, but Floyd... I like I said, I do like the signing just because, you know, maybe if he can get back to what he was doing in Arizona, we will see a lot more evolution as far as what this offense can be. They're definitely stacking weapons for Sam Bradford to be able to do a lot of the things that he does well. And that's why I'm more encouraged by the sign than anything. Anyways, I'm going to get back to my popsicle.
Yank is on the podcast with three other grown men and eating a popsicle. Just to let that be known.
Y'all know how I do it, man.
Violating all kinds of bro codes up in here.
But anyway, so off the air a little bit, Jason, we talked about you having a certain comparison.
Oh, no.
For a certain player in Treadwell. So just go ahead and let it be known. Just go ahead and let it be known. What is
it?
All right. I don't want to just start right in and make Miles's head pop off. But when, you know, obviously we bring in Floyd, the first question that everyone has is, you know, what does it mean for Treadwell? And we've had some discussions kind of offline about it all. And, I mean, obviously I think that this is competition for not just Treadwell, as Yinka said, but they are similar body type guys. Floyd succeeds in a way that I think a lot of us expected that Treadwell would when he came in. And if I'm just stacking it up right now in a vacuum, I would have to put Floyd ahead of Treadwell on my depth chart, because Floyd does have NFL experience. And he has shown that he can be successful in the league. And Treadwell to date has not. I know Treadwell's a young guy. We don't want to write him off just yet, but I guess we can, you know, kind of look at, you know, Treadwell. I didn't love him as a prospect, but when you just go and you look at kind of his production profile and his size, and then you take draft position out of it and look at the players that are most similar to Treadwell. When I look at the data analysis package on Player Profiler, and the closest comp to him is Texas A&M wide receiver Jeff Fuller, who's currently holding it down for the Toronto Argonauts in the CFL.
Treadwell destined for CFL.
I'm not saying that Treadwell is destined for the CFL. I'm just saying that when you look at his college production profile and his athleticism, the closest match is Jeff Fuller. So after him coming out, doing horribly at the combine, having one of the worst rookie seasons for a wide receiver in the last who knows how long. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, these guys are competition for him. Like his first round status doesn't mean much, if anything, anymore, because he had his chance to kind of get the first team reps or whatever, and he squandered it, and now he has to compete just like everybody else.
Well, hold up. So when did he get first team reps last year during training camp? When?
Miles, sorry, Will, hold up. Go ahead.
I'm being for real. Like last year it was Diggs, Charles, they had Charles Johnson ahead, you know, at the X receiver. You know, they were during training camp they had Wright playing quite a bit. I mean, we all know how that ended. But
Man, why you gotta throw shots at you? You mad at me right now, Miles. Focus there.
I'm being for real.
And then you eat my popsicle.
And then you had Thielen out there too. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, all training camp, all preseason, you had Treadwell at the number two slot, you know, at the X position. So he wasn't really running with the ones at all. And that's not to say he wasn't getting, you know, the way he was playing wasn't giving him an opportunity to excel to the number one spot. But he wasn't really given that opportunity either. Again, it does go back to him having to prove it a little bit more, which he didn't. He didn't do as well as we would have liked him to. But I really think people are blowing it out of proportion way more than they need to for his rookie season, just because, you know, from what I'm hearing, you know, there's a lot more injury concerns than from last season that were going on than people really know. And receivers are a really hard position to transition to in the NFL, especially under an offense like a North Turner, where, you know, he's already not expecting much from a rookie receiver anyways. I mean, hell, a couple years ago when Diggs was a rookie, he should have been out the gate playing right away on that receiving core. Norv wasn't having it, you know, didn't like the idea of playing a rookie right away, and he was kind of forced into playing Diggs because Charles Johnson got hurt. So, and again, I'm not trying to compare the two players because they're complete different players, but I'm trying to compare like the scenarios. I do think a guy like Pat Shurmur might be more might not have quite as of a complex route tree that he's asking his receivers to run, and it's more of a spread out system that I think Treadwell's used to, so it might be a little easier of a transition for him.
It's definitely a similar offense that he ran in college. You know, Norv is more of an Air Coryell guy, and it's kind of – I compare it to calculus as opposed to Shermer's West Coast offense being pre-algebra as far as, as far as terminology.
It just sounds terrible, though, like that.
But, you know, with past experience, being in a West Coast offense is very, very simple. So the terminology will be a lot simpler for Treadwell, and – I don't know if the Michael Floyd move put him on notice, but I think it kind of gave them insurance just in case he doesn't prove to be that guy that they thought they were drafting last year.
Yeah, my bad. Real quick, like you said, like I said before, he's going to get suspended. Floyd's going to get suspended a couple games, you know, between the 2-4 range. So, you know, that's – for me, that's why I keep harping on the – they're going to give Treadwell every opportunity to have that, to be in the three wide receiver sets, because – Floyd's going to be missing the first, you know, few games of the season. You know, whether their plan is to incorporate Floyd back into the mix when he is done from his suspension or not. I think they're going to give Treadwell every opportunity to see what they can get from him and see if he can win that job, because if he, why wouldn't you give him every opportunity to kind of take that job and be successful, especially see what he has for those first few games of the season while Floyd's out. And if he does end up stumbling a little bit, not playing very well, you can always bring Floyd into the mix and kind of start taking some reps away from Treadwell. But at this point, why not let him get every opportunity to kind of see what you can get out of him? You know, I call it a return on an investment, because, you know, you spend a first-round pick on somebody and someone that young, and you don't want to just phase them out after 1 year. That's, you're paying them a lot of money to just not see what he can do. So,
and I guess with that one, I look at it a little different, right? Because – I mean, they're going to be competing, so I'm not saying that, you know, put Treadwell on the bench and don't let him get reps. I mean, it's a competition. It's an open competition. I guess what I object to is the notion that kind of going into this next season, because they spent a first-round pick on him in the past, that he should get some kind of preferential treatment or anything like that. With our team and where we are right now, just we need to go in, and Yinka, I know we've talked about it a couple of times, we need to increase competition. Best man wins. If it's Treadwell, cool. If it's not, you know, he can get out there and keep doing what he was doing, you know, keeping our first round special teams tradition alive by killing it for us on one team and coverage, right? Like, he can contribute how he can contribute, but I'm not, like, I don't like the idea. I don't like the thought process that, like, his first round pedigree should buy him really anything really beyond a spot on the roster at this point because of all the guaranteed money we have tied up on him.
But, and so, I don't necessarily disagree with me and Jason talk all the time as far as we're definitely in agreement on bringing in as much competition as possible so that you can obviously have the best man win. But I mean, I know that it's not a popular thing, or maybe not necessarily popular, but it is popular, but it's not as conducive to what some teams should do. You don't always want to give preferential treatment to your first round picks, but that's the name of the game in the league. You are spending draft capital on these players, so you do want to see, as far as return, you do want to see these players succeed a lot more than you want. Not that you want a lot more, but just if you're going to invest in a first-round pick, you do want to see them contribute at a fairly high level. So you spend more time, more coaching, more resources, all you can do to make sure that this player is playing at an optimal level. Now, in the respects of Treadwell, you know, it's, you want to see him, he doesn't need to become your number one, but you want to see him be one of the mainstays as far as your wide receiving core for the next, you know, let's say 10 years. You want him to be one of those guys where you can't make any decision besides, you know, extending him and getting him on the field because he contributes that much. So I guess my mentality is, yeah, you do want to let the best man win, obviously, because it's going to contribute. Whoever's going to help you contribute to win games is who should be on the field. However, we can't kid ourselves and think that, you know, there's all this big hype around the draft and, you know, having draft picks and stuff. And yet we're going to, we're still going to make them earn their keep. But at the same time, we are in some ways younger guys going to help them to get up to speed a lot faster than guys that we, you know, maybe are undrafted or, you know, maybe a free agent who doesn't have so much guaranteed money, so there's not big of a cost with them.
Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with Miles, so to speak. I think, you know, Floyd's going to get a suspension. Everybody knows that. Whether it's going to be 2, 3, or 4 games, we don't really know at this point. But whatever it is, I think it's going to be an audition for Treadwell, however long his suspension is. So whether if it's 2 games, 3 games, or 4 games, it doesn't really matter. They're going to give him that time, I believe, to prove exactly what he is or what he can be. And, you know, if he can't be that guy, they know what they have in Floyd. You know, he's a proven player in this league. He has been on a downswing, you know, last year, but he has proven to have success in this league. So he's more of a proven guy, so to speak, as opposed to what Treadwell is, who's an unknown to this point. So they're going to give him every opportunity. And Floyd really can't report to the facilities, I think, until June 17th. So that's another big advantage that Treadwell has over him. So he'll already have the upper hand in OTAs as well to prove that he can be that guy. So they're going to give him every chance.
That's a good point. Suspension. That's a good point, Jay. That's what I was going to bring up. We can get moving on here in a minute, but that's what I was going to bring up was, you know, Floyd can't even be a part of the minicamp OTAs in June. So, and May or June, he can't leave Arizona until June 17th. So, you know, he won't be able to do anything until training camp. So at that point, I mean, that's where I'm saying they're going to right away when, you know, training camp starts and in these OTAs. And in my assumption, this is, you know, I don't know for sure, but like, this is, you know, kind of what I would probably do in the 3 wide receiver sets when they're lining up, you know, running some plays in practice. That's kind of what I'm expecting to see is, you know, Thielen, Diggs, Treadwell. I mean, Floyd can't be there. So, you know, why wouldn't it be, Treadwell at this point? So heading into training camp, things would always change because that's when the real competition starts. But, you know, it just helps Treadwell, you know, getting a little bit more of a leg up in this offense. So.
Really has no point, but it's going to be an interesting dilemma. It's going to be a really good camp battle once Floyd is able to report to the facility on June 17th. We'll get some more clarity as far as his suspension and the discipline that he'll have to face heading into the season. But now let's move to the other side of the ball. Let's talk about some defensive backs, cornerbacks specifically, and Trey Waynes and Terrence Newman. We know they re-signed Terrence Newman to another 1-year deal, and he's been a really, really good player since joining the Vikings. And, you know, we spent the high pick on Trey Waynes in the 2015 draft, ended up taking him 11th overall, I believe it was. Spent the high pick on him. Steadily gotten better, you know, arguably, over the years. But, you know, they keep re-signing Newman. He's, you know, he's going to the fountain of youth, so to speak. He's still getting better as well and defying the odds of the position. So, let's talk about Trey Waynes a little bit. What's you guys' thoughts on him and what he is to this point? Starting off with you, Jason.
So, I tweeted something out I didn't think was really that controversial, which is when I look at the cornerback depth of the Vikings, I see Rhodes, who's a stud, number one corner in the league, or one of the number one corners in the league. We have Newman, who I jokingly said has an AARP card. And then we have a bunch of dudes who are not proven. And folks did not like that. And
not to cut you off, Jason. Did Jason just say he tweeted something out that he didn't think was controversial? I feel like Jason only ever tweets out things that he knows are controversial.
Bro, anyway, is that controversial though? To say that Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander.
Know what you were doing tweeting that out.
But I'm saying, is that a controversial take? Should it be controversial to say that Trey Waynes, whose career to date has played 774 snaps, that's less snaps than Terrence Newman played in 2015 by less than 100. Like, I don't think it should be controversial anyway to say that, you know, Trey Waynes still hasn't proven that he can be a down in and down out reliable corner in the league. He had some issues coming out in terms of, you know, his hips and agility and ability to mirror guys when they're making quick moves in front of him. Mackenzie Alexander, all of us loved that pick when he came out. Obviously, corner's a tough position to make the transition. He had some issues last year. We all hope that he's going to get better. But as of now, we still don't know what his development's going to be like.
He's allowed and to have the benefit of the doubt, though.
Yeah, he gets the benefit of the doubt, sure. And then who's next? Who's next? Like, who's going to be after those guys on the depth chart?
Jabari.
Is Jabari coming back again?
Like Jabari's coming back.
Marcus Sherrills, maybe.
Marcus Sherrills and cornerback.
Trey Roberson. Like,
Marcus Shields is not a cornerback. He's a special teamer. That's it.
Specialist.
Yes. To answer your question, Jason, it's not. It is fair criticism. Well, not even criticism. It's a fair take to say. No. That's why I'm correcting. Hold on. It is fair to say that Trey Waynes has not proven himself to be better than Terrence Newman. I think that's fair to say, because I think the level of play that Terrence Newman has exhibited thus far has honestly been pretty elite. When you compare to some of the corners in the league, and even on the Vikings team. Now, what I think is not fair to say is that he hasn't proven that he can start. Now, I think he's definitely shown some flashes of some good playmaking abilities at times. So, with a position like corner, the only thing that is, in my opinion, is very similar to quarterback. You're gonna the only way to improve at that position, you have to get repped. You have to get burned. You have to sometimes suck. You have to, you know, do the things that be able to get that muscle memory that is going to propel you to be a top flight player. The good and bad part about it is we have a player that's playing at such a high level that is keeping Trey Waynes off the field. Now, again, the controversy becomes like, well, why is a 24-year-old still having to be kept off the field versus a soon-to-be 39-year-old, I believe? Well, it's because of play. I mean, we were just talking about in the previous conversation where Comp is good at the top. You know, Terrence is playing well, and Trey isn't. I don't want to say he's bad per se, but he's not playing nearly as well as Terrence Newman is, which is what's keeping him from being an active starter, which is problematic because we need him to step into that starter role, but not problematic because that means Terrence Newman is playing that well.
So you guys think it's a lack of talent or just lack of reps and muscle memory that he's not getting?
I mean, I think there's going to be some things that he always struggles with just because he does have poor agility. He has poor hips. His change of direction isn't good, and I don't know if that's something that necessarily does get better with time or reps. I think if you try to beat him on a 9 route, he's going to stick with you, you know, stride for stride. But, you know, those quick slants, the quick ins, outs, those plays are always, I think, going to give him some trouble. And obviously, like, I want him to get more reps. Our hope is that he ends up being better. But, you know, to kind of, when I dug into this a little bit, having a conversation about Waynes in December, I think at the time, Trey Waynes was, like, ranked 102 by Pro Football Focus, and Player Profiler's cornerback ranking service had him at 77, right? So it's fair to say that with more reps, we hope he gets better. But I also think it should be fair to say that based on what he's shown on the field thus far, I mean, he's a big question mark going into the year. And a question mark, you know, for this year and kind of beyond in terms of what we're doing at the cornerback position.
So then let me ask a question then. This is to extend to all you guys. Should he play on the outside? Should he continue to get training on the outside? Should he slide in maybe to the slot?
No, not the slot. Not one bit.
I'm just asking because we got another corner that is on the roster right now, who looked very good playing on the outside in college with Mackenzie Alexander, and I know we're gonna try to shoehorn him back into the slot, kind of like what we did with Trey, with being able to do a lot of different things. I personally like him on the outside. I was just wondering if. What you guys think we should do as far as this cornerback depth, which is very scary, to be perfectly honest.
Well, so I'll chime in real quick. For me, I'm keeping Trey on the outside, and I'm letting him compete with Terrence Newman on the out for that, you know, opposite spot of Xavier Rhodes. And what the nice thing about having a guy like Terrence Newman around still is he can play anywhere. You could put him anywhere in that defense, really, and he knows what he needs to do. He knows what everybody else around him needs to do. So if you need to slide him into the nickel role for a little while, if McKenzie's, you know, struggling a little bit, you can do that, and you can keep Trey on the outside. I think this is really going to be the season where we're going to see Trey Waynes kind of take over that starting role and kind of let Terrence Newman, you know, play more of that, you know, rotational role, which I think is important because you never know if you're going to need him to slide in somewhere. You know, whether we've seen him go at safety, you know, nickel. You know, Xavier Rhodes gets banged up all the time. You know, go replace Xavier Rhodes every once in a while. So, you know, I'm really thinking Terrence Newman should be that key rotational guy to kind of help anywhere where you need him to, because he can play anywhere.
So he'd be like the Joe Berger.
I was just going to say he's the defensive Joe Berger.
In a way, that's kind of what he is. But, I mean, I'd say he's better than Joe Berger at what he does. But yeah, basically.
Yeah. It'll definitely be interesting to see. And, you know, I agree with all the points that were made. And, you know, Trey's not a guy that can play the inside, you know, corner position. He's not a slot guy because his hips are just – they're awful right now, so to speak. And, you know, it's something that I'm knocking for pre-draft. And like I told you guys off the air, he was my CB4 that year behind Peters, Darby, and Kevin Johnson. So,
you know, I'm going to have to put something in the show notes about CB4 now, right?
That's right. It'd be interesting to see if they, you know, let Wayne's, you know, so to speak, learn by trial and error. But, you know, being in the NFC North, there's some really good quarterbacks. You know, you got Stafford, you got Rodgers, and we've seen them attack Wayne's from time to time when he was out there. But they were spot playing him against those guys. And, you know, maybe would be better going into the game knowing that he has a full week of preparation as a starter. So it's just a mindset thing with him. And who knows, maybe he might be able to overcome his deficiencies. We don't know. But we're hoping Trey plays a lot better next season. And hopefully Terrence Newman keeps finding the fountain of youth and keeps helping us out and being that jack-of-all-trades guy in the secondary. But let's move on now.
Hold on. You better not forget about the Mitchell Trubisky and Mike Glennon.
You left that out all quarterback.
Yeah. Chicago.
We're good for a loss a year. Soldier Field is definitely a loss a year.
You're right.
And it is. And Mitchell Trubisky will play his best game at Soldier Field against us.
Jay Cutler's best game last season.
Absolutely. So does that mean that there's really only been in like the last, I don't know, like 10 years or something, two quarterbacks to beat the Bears at Soldier Field? Brett Favre, and what was the name of the other one?
Teddy.
Okay, next topic. Let's go on.
So let's talk about Mike Zimmer's press conference that he had a couple of days ago. You know, just some highlights for people that missed it. You know, he expressed his love for Teddy. That's like his son, so to speak. Just saying he doesn't want Teddy to go anywhere.
Okay, let me just say, I feel bad for Adam Zimmer, who's actually the linebacker. He's still a linebacker's coach, correct?
Yes, he is.
Because Zim be talking about Teddy with such, like, pride in his eyes. You can sometimes even see the tears coming down through the glasses and stuff. But Adam gets no love whatsoever. He's like, Dad, I'm here. No, Teddy, okay. So it's just hilarious to watch because I think I tweeted out last week, like, Teddy is Zim's real biological son. So
absolutely. You know, he dove into Bucky Hodges a little bit and some other draft prospects. Very interesting quote about Bucky Hodges saying he's going to be a traditional H-back, you know, jack-of-all-trades guy who's going to play tight end, some fullback, can split out wide, even in the slot sometimes. So he seems to really like Bucky Hodges as well. And, you know, another interesting quote from his press conference was he said the Vikings are going to get back to being that blue collar team, that run first, you know, just putting our heads down and just running the ball, because that's how they won the division in 2015. So that's something he wants to get back to. What do you guys think about Mike Zimmer's press conference, starting off with you, Miles?
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of it through some of the acquisitions they've made, you know, and starting with, you know, Riley Reiff, Latavius Murray, and the right tackle. Oh my gosh, help me
Mike
out,
Remmers.
Mike Remmers. Thank you, Mike Remmers. So, you know, guys that are really hard nosed guys that, you know, that really excel in the run game, which I know they're really trying to get back to, is being, you know, being one of the top running offenses in the league. So, I mean, then you go with the Pat Elflein and Dalvin Cook picks and Danny Isadora's. You know, those kind of Jaleel Johnson, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, Ben Gideon, you know, all those guys are guys that are, you know, you like to call them the blue collar lunch pail guys, you know, the guys who, you know, come to work, guys who play on special teams, you know, do it all in that, you know, the 9-to-5 kind of guys, you know, who do that, you know, that the dirty work. So I'm excited. I think it's important. It's kind of what, you know, that's where Zim builds his foundation. So I'm excited to see him kind of get back to those ways. I think we got away from it last season.
Absolutely. You know, Vikings had one of the worst rushing attacks in the league, maybe the worst. I know it's between them and the Giants. I'm not sure who finished exactly last, but I know those were two of the worst rushing offenses in the league. Moving on to you, Jason, what's your thoughts on Zimmer and his press conference and what he had to say?
I mean, I guess I understand what he's saying in terms of, you know, being tougher, being able to run the ball better. So I guess I understand that piece. And our boy Matt Kohler over at ESPN 1500 wrote a really good piece this past week, sometime this week, basically saying that if the Vikings run game just gets to just average, that we will have an above average offense for the first time in a while, just based on what we were able to do and the expected points that we lost based on how terrible our run game was last year. So from that aspect, I definitely understand what he's saying and what he's looking to accomplish in terms of us being able to run the ball better. What I do worry about a little bit in terms of that, you know, we're going to be, you know, tougher, stronger, kind of smash mouth, you know, type of game plan is that, I mean, when we're really thinking about the most kind of efficient or effective way to run an offense, that's really not it. And we saw that a couple of times last year where it just like it seemed like a stubbornness or something where it was just like, we're going to line up and show the other team we're tougher than them and get all our big guys in there and it's third and one, we're going to go. And okay, we didn't get it. Okay, we're going back fourth and one and we're going to do the same thing again. And like all season, we were messaging each other being like, why can't we just spread them out and do a QB sneak or like try to be the team that's smarter than the other team instead of the team that always just has to kind of prove that we're stronger or tougher. So there was a point right before he kind of got into all that where he hesitated a little bit and said, you know, I'm not going to get into too much of it, and then kind of came back with we're going to be tougher than piece. So my hope is that while, yes, the running game gets better, that we also don't always kind of revert back to that we need to be the tougher than team all the time, that there are occasions where we, you know, we are smarter than the other guy or we do that that quarterback sneak, which has proven to be the most effective short down play that I don't think we ran a single one of all last season. So that's what I took away from it. Yes, the running game needs to be better, but no, I hope we don't take our offense back to like 1950 or something.
Who's quarterback sneaking, Jason? Who's playing quarterback when we're doing that QB sneak?
Sam can fall forward for a yard, man.
I mean, yeah, that's just what I wanted to hear you say.
Yeah, Sam,
I do agree with
Sam can hit a quarterback sneak now.
Anybody can
do especially QB1. I do agree with we do need to work smarter, not harder. That was obviously something that we struggled with so it was just disgusting to have to watch second and one, third and one, fourth and one, and missing and getting stopped all three times. Something that I took away from Zimmer's presser, but it's more of an overarching thing that I think I wish I could just sit down with Zim and tell him. Zim has to make a decision. Is he going to be a dictator? That's fine, because I think Zim is smart enough now on both sides of the ball where he can do more with both sides of the ball, or is he going to kind of step back and more kind of CEO it and make it more of a democracy for the people that are kind of underneath him? Because I think what ends up happening is Zim tries to step back and let the people who he trusts to do it, and then he gets into this point where he's just like, no, I'm the boss. There's not going to be any pushback when I tell him things and stuff. But then, you know, a couple months ago, he was saying, well, you know, I really listened to the players and what they were telling me and all the other stuff. Like, he kind of has to make the decision. He can't kind of play both sides of the field where he's going to be this, yeah, well, I'm really listening, trying to change, do all this other stuff, where he's going to be that hard-nosed Zim that we know him to be. You know, I think the reason why, you know, we kind of put these guys side by side a lot because, you know, they spent some time together with Zim and Belichick. You know, Belichick is the CEO. He runs that ship. I mean, you know he runs that ship. And I think for us to see the Vikings truly improve, like we saw with the defense improve, when Zimmer had his hands on the defense, you saw the improvements. I remember going to the very first preseason game when Mike Zimmer was the head coach. And from watching it, I could see defensive players just flying all over the field. And I was just like, this feels different than I've ever seen a defense do in the past when we were just doing Tampa 2. So one of the points that I got, I guess, to bring it home. It's just like I want Zim to stay the path that he's kind of choosing for himself as the head coach. Are you going to be that that dictator? It's just like, I want my hands in absolutely everything. This is how it's going to go and stuff. Because unfortunately and unfortunately, there is some reward with that stubbornness that we've seen from Zim. Or is he going to be the guy that maybe can have his hands in certain things, but just kind of sit back and look from the top and be more of that CEO type thing? So I guess when I watched both press conferences from now and then kind of going back, it's just I saw that being an issue specifically with Zim.
Yeah, I know Jason brought that up a lot a while ago. He wanted Zim to kind of step back and just be the overall CEO of the total operations and just let George Edwards run the defense. You know, the one game he did call was against the Cowboys, and the defense played exceptionally well, and they looked well prepared. The offense just couldn't. Just couldn't generate enough points in crucial situations for us to come out with the win. But I thought the defense played really well in that game. And, you know, there was a lot of interesting quotes that Zimmer commented on. And, you know, his press conferences are usually really good, and he usually leaves us with some food for thought, so to speak, especially when he talks about, you know, Teddy Bridgewater and just some things that they've been working on to improve the overall roster. But there's a lot of things, you know, looking forward, there's a lot of good things coming up. They got mini camp here in the next few weeks, and where all the guys will be back, so to speak, on the field. And we'll see all the new guys out there as well with all of the veteran guys. So there's a lot of things to look forward to, and, you know, a lot of new guys running around. And you can really tell the guys are really excited and new beginnings. Pat Shurmur now has a full offseason, so to speak, to implement his whole playbook. And, you know, it's basically his first year, so to speak, as well. You know, being the true total offensive coordinator, he doesn't have North Turner looking over his back now. And, you know, that old Eric Coryell offense is officially out now, which we're all happy to see on this podcast, just because it's an older offense, sort of in the dinosaur age, so to speak. But we're really happy that Pat Shurmur is here. And it's a big season for him as well. You know, he has his handpicked guy in Sam Bradford, who played, you know, well last season, so to speak, to his standards. And, you know, it's a big season for everybody on the offense right now. So and, let's just talk.
One last point as far as Wells kind of getting off of all this stuff. As I'm looking at all the players that we more or less have brought in and what they do well, what we don't do well, I think what we're going to start seeing a little bit from this offense is a lot more movement. Than we've had in the past, especially with the offensive line. I think we're going to see a lot more moving pockets. I think some of the players that we got, especially on the exterior, they don't do the greatest, specifically Remmer. It's just, you know, taking on some of those speed guys and whatnot. So being able to move the pocket, being able to give them more help, I think will add to that. Bringing in a guy like Dalvin Cook and having the run back by committee, more screens, more wildcat, a lot more motion that's going to happen either pre-snap or actually after the snap than I think we've seen in the past. That was the other point that I think I got from Zim's press conference. So,
JR, I think it's time for you to kind of say something nice about Sam. You know, I kind of thought I think we had someone call you out on Twitter about it. hold on, let me make sure I get him some credit on here because it was pretty funny.
Was it Adam West?
Yeah.
So here's the thing with the whole Teddy Sam debate for me. So, fan pre-draft. So I loved him at Louisville. I loved everything about him. And I just loved this whole story. So I kind of fell in love with Teddy. And he ended up being on my favorite team. That's why I love Teddy so much. I loved him as a prospect. And he ended up being my quarterback on my favorite team. So I don't hate Sam Bradford, just like our blog says. I know I'm a fan of Sam Bradford. I like him, but I just don't really trust him right now. And, you know, you guys said I had a perfect analogy of Sam. Sam is that boyfriend to his girlfriend that, you know, she always calls him out and wants him to do better. And he's that guy that'll do better for 1 week and he'll go back to being his old self. So that's my analogy of Sam Bradford. And
hold up. He said, say something nice about Sam.
He can't even do it.
And you went through a whole story to tell us how Sam is.
About how great Teddy is.
About how you love Teddy, and Sam is the boyfriend that can't get right. I mean,
it's the truth.
Just like we called Yinka out last week, we need you to give us a proper compliment of Sam Bradford, dog.
He had a hell of a year last year.
I guess I said it about Sam.
He played really well last year. But Jason always go back to the numbers.
There it is, but.
Jason always goes back to the numbers to where he was mediocre.
Don't bring me into this. This is your opportunity to give a proper compliment with no buts. Just say something nice about the man.
Sam had a hell of a year last year, and I hope he plays really well this year and earns that extension.
There we go. There we go.
He's the quarterback of the Vikings, so I'll be cheering for him.
Absolutely.
There you go, man.
Did y'all accept that?
Was that so hard? See, I didn't have that.
I'll let the people decide when they listen.
I didn't have that problem. I'm glad I didn't have that. What's wrong with you, JR?
This is like your parents making you eat your vegetables when you were little.
Ain't that
right now?
And no choice, though.
Man, my mom was a nutritionist and Nigerian. That's an N square triple double threat, man. I'm telling you. I couldn't leave the table. Okay, let me actually tell you a little something about me. So I had a problem when I was younger, and I'd eat really slow, but I'd always get distracted, and then my brothers would leave the table, and I would leave the table too. But my food wasn't finished. So my mom would, you know, come back to the table and stuff, and she started yelling at me, like, you're not finished your food, I'm going to throw this away and all this stuff. And then I would get angry with my mom. I'm like, no, I'm still eating. As I'm playing, you know, with my Power Ranger Megazord toy in the corner right there, food getting all cold. So at the end of the day, you know, it was my fault.
So you eat slow and you late to everything.
Okay, not everything. Just things that matter, okay?
I got you.
I'll probably be late for the wedding, but anyways, go ahead.
Let's talk about some future things you guys got upcoming, whether it's, you know, content or just some other things that you got going on, whether it's the I Don't Hate Sam Bradford blog or some other websites that you got some future stuff coming up. Miles, you got anything for the people?
I'm still diving into some of the Stacey Coley stuff. I want to kind of get working on that. And then that's about it for me right now. That's probably my big project right now. And then talking with y'all.
Good. Jason, you got anything for us?
Well, I think the most important thing that I have for us right now is that we are going to get JR to put his scouting skills to actual proper good use by starting up the Climbing the Pocket Dynasty League. So at some point, you probably see a note from one of us on Twitter where you get a chance to put your football knowledge and team building strategies up against all of us. And JR can get his feet wet in the fantasy world here a little bit so that we can start using that scouting for Dynasty going forward.
Absolutely. You know, I've played fantasy football before, but I haven't really did a deep dive into it. And, you know, this Dynasty stuff is new to me. So let's see how good I can be in this Dynasty thing. But I'm excited about it. Yinka, you got some stuff upcoming, some content?
Okay, I mean, I did. But here's the problem. On Monday, I was just like, my computer's been crashing. I need to go check it out. Took it to the guy, you know, thinking that, you know, I'm taking my child to surgery. Everything's going to go good. And all of a sudden, the doctor told me it's time to put your child down. And I've had my computer for like the last 6 years or something. So, and the project I was currently working on, was I was doing this like kind of deep in dive, kind of what I did with Teddy last year, I was doing with Sam. So I lost all of that, y'all. So once I get a new laptop, I'm going to start going back into doing all that stuff and whatnot. And I'll probably do some like breaking down of like rookie mini camp.
Can we start a GoFundMe page for Yinka?
Yeah, right? That's a good idea, Miles. Go fund Sexy Prince. I can be that Nigerian prince that, you know, you pay stuff for me.
Yeah.
And then you I'll take get you something back. And then I'll take you to Popeyes just for my order to be
for them chicken tenders.
Yeah, man. That was just messed up.
But for me, I've been working on some 2018 draft stuff, just getting a head start on those guys heading into the summer. I finished up offensive tackles today, top eight guys that look really good, so to speak. 2018 is really looking good for offensive line, so I'm excited about that. And I'll have those, the watch list, so to speak, out probably sometime next week on offensive tackles. Next group up will be wide receivers and quarterbacks, two really strong groups in 2018 as well. So just giving everybody a heads up as far as a watch list heading into 2018. You know, once again, it's
putting in that work, though.
Yeah, man, got to. Somebody got to do it. So once again, this is another great and fire edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Again, I am your co-host, Jordan Reed, alongside Miles Gorham, Jason Brown, and Yinka Allende. Thank you guys again for listening, and we'll be back again next week with some more fire content.
Jeff Fuller had 2 catches for 34 yards last season.
We're fighting, baby.